This is Briar Cloth, and I'm a sales agronomist for CHS Ag Services in Greenbush, Minnesota. And we're pleased to bring you this update from the Red River Farm Network. CHS Ag Services, providing solutions for your success.
Wednesday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Whitney Pittman, along with Randy Conan and Sierra Doctor. Rain shower activity the first week of the two-week outlook is expected to be favorable, with enough rain to help in the driest areas, but light enough and scattered enough to allow planting progress to continue. World Weather Incorporated says a scattered shower pattern will occur next Tuesday through the end of May, bringing rain to nearly all the region at one time or another. Temperatures will be cool going into this weekend, but will warm into the 70s and 80s next week.
Russia confirmed that the Black Sea Grain Initiative has been extended for 2 months. Russia had threatened to quit the arrangement unless a list of conditions were met to counter the effect of imposed sanctions after Russia sent its armed forces into Ukraine. It's not clear yet whether any of the demands have been secured.
In a webinar hosted by the Northern Crops Institute, John Stewart and Associates Principal Kevin Clausen said Russia's short extension of the Black Sea Grain Initiative is strategic.
I think Russia made their move going from 120 days down to 60 days last go-round. They knew that that caused massive uncertainty. So when you're able to cut that down to 60 days, what that essentially does is it only gives you 30 days of certainty. Nominating vessels, getting in position to go in there takes you 30 days to do that. So I think Russia's move is going to continue to extend it on very short-term basis to try to really constrain the efficiency and the productivity for all the participants in that supply chain. It appears to me they are strategically trying to cause choke points at every point, from the length of the extension to their inspection process with Turkey.
Clausen also said that while sanctions would apply pressure on Russia, it may not be very effective.
On the surface, you would think it would be significant, but I think there's enough relationship with China and others that are dependent on their supply to provide the support that they need. So I think we should assume that Russia has enough allies from a food security standpoint to get the support that they need. That's obviously a risk, but I don't think it's a meaningful risk today, because I think they have enough partners that are dependent on their food supply to help them get what they need.
Comstock Investments market analyst Joe Camp is watching Russian grain prices. Camp says Russian prices are pressuring global prices.
The key is that we haven't seen a true response in Russian cash grain prices rebounding at this point. That's what it's going to take, whether we have an export corridor or not. If Russian wheat prices in particular are still as cheap as they've been, then we're not going to have this prospect of better exports flowing into the U.S. As has been hoped.
Camp also remains cautious about the economy.
They're relatively calm right now. Stocks mostly higher here. The dollar index up a little bit. No real spillover pressure like we've been vulnerable to over the past several weeks, but that's not necessarily something we're clear of yet with all that's going on, inflation and the Federal Reserve and the coming debt ceiling issue. All of those things are something we're going to watch out for as a potential risk point, or something that could help out if we get a deal done and we have more rosier attitudes in the outside financials. We might be able to find some support for commodities too.
Van On & Company market analyst Christy Van On thinks economic concern is the biggest driver of the commodities.
We have debt ceiling talks right now, and it sounds like they are not going well. It sounds like we're going to have some major issues between the two parties trying to come together. And so I think you have those economic concerns around the market. We have a Federal Reserve that continues to want to fight inflation, which also means food inflation. So we have that as well. And then you come in here and you have managed money that's being aggressive sellers. So we need to see kind of that selling pressure stop.
The economy is also a concern for the livestock market.
Biggest concern for me when you look at the meat markets is just the fact that you have economic concerns that have pretty much been around this market for quite some time. And until we can see some sort of resolve when you look at the debt ceiling talks, I think you're going to have the market unable to really have those big days.
The Wheat Quality Council's Hard Red Winter Wheat Tour's first day showed disappointing yields, averaging just under 30 bushels per acre in eastern and northern Kansas. Wheat Quality Council Executive Vice President Dave Green says that is not a surprise.
It was kind of what people were thinking was going to happen, but we saw some decent wheat as we started out during the day, but as we went north and west, conditions kind of declined almost continuously then all the way to Colby last night.
The tour is likely traveling through the hardest drought-hit areas today in western Kansas.
It's worse than Colby down here. I'm outside of Liberal, probably 20 miles north of Liberal, Kansas, and it's all we can do to find a field that isn't abandoned. And so the wheat is in really tough shape. We see a few irrigated fields. Most of the irrigation looks like it's triticale instead of wheat this year. And it's just a lot of blown out wheat that probably is not going to get harvested.
Kansas Wheat Vice President of Research Aaron Harries is seeing what was expected during the second day of the wheat tour.
So we're on basically Highway 50. So if you draw a line from Dodge City straight east to Wichita, that's the area of the state we're going. And, you know, you run into the rare pocket of decent wheat. And by decent, I mean it has a chance to be average. You know, we see some irrigated wheat. Obviously, that's going to do okay. But we've had a hard time even finding fields that we can count. That's kind of the sad situation, because you drive by a field and you can tell from the road that they're not going to harvest it. So, you know, we go every 20 or 30 miles and then count a field, and sometimes we've had to put a few more miles on just to find a field that we could get a yield estimate in.
This is the Red River Farm Network.
Wednesday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. Frederick, South Dakota farmer Taylor Sumption says soils are still drying out around his area. Some small grains planting has been completed.
Start, I would say, 2 to 3 weeks behind normal. Definitely on the wetter side with the snow and the late melt that we had. There wasn't much frost, so it actually did soak in pretty good. We have gotten a few inches of rain in the last couple weeks, so we're going around some wet spots, but you know, after the last 20 years, we're kind of used to it. Oats is the only small grain that we grow. When we started the oatmeal deal, we quit wheat, and I don't want any chance of contamination with gluten. So we plant oats. We do have alfalfa and hay for our cow-calf operation, and then most of what we plant is corn and soybeans.
Sumption says his soil type doesn't allow for a lot of drainage.
Most of what we farm is in the Jim River Valley. We're west of the Jim River, so we're primarily heavy clay soils. Some silty areas. We have a few areas with some lighter soils, but for the most part, we're pretty heavy clay and silt. Drainage is an issue. We've just, with the moisture we've fought the last few years, it just continues to be a problem with, you know, saline spots and poor drainage. Lots of roads that are underwater or soft or washed out, and it's kind of the trend we've been in for quite a while.
New legislation would update the renewable fuel standard to include corn ethanol as an advanced biofuel. National Corn Growers Association Director of Public Policy Kathy Berggren says it's time for the EPA to recognize the strides corn has made in reducing carbon.
Well, you know, I think this may be a little bit of a long process, but we certainly appreciate the sponsors of this legislation. I think, right, trying to sort of bring some attention to this issue that maybe it's time for an update. The legislation also requires EPA to use the more modern and accurate life cycle analysis from the Department of Energy to measure the emissions reductions from biofuels. So really these improvements to the RFS. We know those are tricky to make, though. We don't want to kind of open up the RFS and have some harm done by folks who might not be supporters of the RFS.
Berggren says corn ethanol is close to cutting its carbon emissions in half.
Certainly making some really good progress. You know, some of the most recent research too, looking, you know, that ethanol is kind of at or kind of closing in on that 50% fewer carbon emissions than gasoline. And some of that is due to improvements made on the farm side. You know, reduced tillage, no tillage, better fertilizer management. All of those things help. And then, you know, efficiencies on the ethanol production side as well. There's room for more improvements, whether that is new technologies like carbon capture at an ethanol plant.
House Ag Subcommittee heard testimony today as a review of animal agriculture stakeholder priorities. National Cattlemen's Beef Association President and South Dakota Cattleman Todd Wilkinson testified that low cattle numbers are at great risk and need programming to uphold herd health and manage disease threats.
NCBA calls on Congress to fully fund three critical animal health components in the Farm Bill: the National Animal Vaccine and Veterinary Countermeasures Bank, the National Animal Disease Preparedness and Responsive Program, and the National Animal Health Laboratory Network, collectively referred to as the three-legged stool. The U.S. must be prepared to deal with disasters like a foot-and-mouth disease outbreak, as economic consequences would be in the tens of billions of dollars. We simply cannot afford to do nothing. In this case, an ounce of prevention is truly worth more than a pound of cure, and NCBA calls on Congress to robustly fund the three-legged stool.
Wilkerson also spoke in opposition of USDA's packers and stockers rules, saying it could open doors to lengthy litigation.
USDA's proposed forthcoming packers and stockers rules. Yet again, USDA is attempting to unilaterally expand its authority under the Packers and Stockers Act. We've seen this same playbook employed by USDA several times over the past 15 years. If finalized, these rules would upend decades of innovation in livestock marketing agreements and open the door to frivolous lawsuits. Put simply, the rules empower trial lawyers to impose regulation by litigation. This is precisely why NCBA and the vast majority of livestock and poultry groups have opposed and continue to oppose these misguided regulations.
You're listening to the Red River Farm Network.
Welcome to Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network. University of Minnesota Extension Associate Professor in Agronomy and Plant Genetics, Seth Nave, says fields are still wet in southern Minnesota.
We've had anywhere from 5 to highest I've heard was 15 inches of rain over since last Monday. So pretty unusual bout of weather. And, you know, it kind of stretches from a little bit west of here. The worst of it's kind of southern Brown County, northern Waukegan County, but this wet streak over the last week has gone all the way, and they got quite a bit of rain all the way over towards Rochester. So,
Neve says some corn emergence is starting to take shape.
Some of the earliest planted corn was emerging. I hadn't seen any soybeans yet. A lot of the corn had not emerged yet. You know, even over the weekend here now, I'm seeing on the higher ground, I'm seeing more corn poking through. But I'm guessing that where the water's standing, there's going to have to be some replants.
The Ukrainian government is removing export restrictions on a variety of ag commodities. The restrictions were imposed last year to prevent domestic food shortages during the ongoing war. That decision was made to bring more foreign dollars into Ukraine.
Looking at markets before we leave you, July wheat Minneapolis down 16 and three quarters at 862. September 18 and three quarters lower at 861 and three quarters. Chicago wheat 21 and a quarter lower. Kansas City wheat down 6 at 889. July corn 16 and three quarters lower at 564. July soybeans 21 and a half lower at 1342. Canola in Winnipeg down $11.60 a metric ton at 1780 Canadian. June live cattle 67 cents higher. Feeder cattle May down $1.10. June lean hogs down $2.12. You're listening to the Red River Farm Network.